First of all, thank you to Jeff and Raina again for sponsoring tonight's class. Hi, Viva, welcome back. In honor of a high school graduation of their nieces, Avigail, Khalifi, and Adele Shami. All right. Not the best with smarty names, so you'll excuse me. But hopefully they go, Mechayel El Chayel, continue in their developments properly and with great success. And Nachas, the whole family. We are in the middle of a topic called Nolad. Let's see, Sarita wasn't here last week. Adina wasn't here last week. At least not at that point last week. But we'll do a little bit of a review just in terms of the concept. Does anyone remember, we also did for those who want like a good review, I'll probably end up talking myself into another review now, of all the different kinds of muksa that we've done thus far, which could be good for those people who want to sort of categorize everything we've done. And remember the different categories we went through? Just a quick list. I think we went through four of them. Right, so what was number one? Our first topic was Muksa Mamish, or, Muksa Machmas Gufo is what most people will call it. Muksa Machmas Gufo. That's your typical Muksa. That's the sticks and the stones, things that are just completely useless by nature of being useless things. That doesn't mean you can't use it. Doesn't mean you can't move them in other ways if necessary, but ultimately they're just naturally useless things. Yeah. Yeah, it does. I told you some of them have, some of them don't. I don't know why. It's the strangest thing. Oh, you didn't look at it, did it? Yeah, yeah. So it has these four categories, and so that's the main category. That's what we understand to be mukta, just generally. Then we have what we are calling a category of mukta. But Klishim Lachta Lister. Klishim Lachta Lister are utensils which may or may not be also called mukta, but for all intents and purposes, they're mukta in the sense that you can't fully pick them up unless you have a good reason. Right? That's your hammer that you need to open your nuts. That's the, a can opener that you use for other things. Well, I guess can opener, I'll leave that out for now. That wasn't a specific example. But things that are potentially usher because they are designated for usher purposes. That doesn't mean that you can't use them for mutter purposes. That just means that their default is, avoid, avoid, avoid. And we had the whole question is that even according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold a mukta, because maybe this category is not a mukta category. We are listing it as our mukta because that's how everybody else talks about it. But it really might not be categorized as a mukta thing. And if you look at that chart, last week, if you remember, I got the gray book. So some editions of the gray 39 Malachos book, the four-volume gray 39 Malachos book, has a chart. You said it was 37? I thought it was 38. Okay. So on page 38 of that book, the end of the mukta, either the end or the beginning of the mukta chapter, it has a beautiful chart which goes through all of it. I wouldn't make it the exact way that they made it, but it lists this as one of the mukta categories. And for all intents and purposes, practically, it is one of them, even though there are exceptions that do not apply to the others. But the point for us is, that's category number two. And the category number three was mukta machmas chisaron kis, something which is particularly valuable. That doesn't necessarily mean financial. It also means how you orient yourself towards that thing. It could be your precious Pesach china. Is that a kli shalach lister? We talked about is that mukta machmas chisaron kis? We talked about that because we discussed whether mukta machmas chisaron kis is itself a subcategory of category number two. If you remember way back when, I don't know, it was not so long ago, it was 2-3 months ago, we talked about maybe you can only have mukta machmas chisaron kis as an added stringency to something which is already kli shalach lister. Right? The nafkamina being the Pesach plates. Yeah. Pesach plates are by nature not kli shalach lister, they're kli shalach leheter. They're plates. You can use plates. And some will therefore say they are impossible They cannot become Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kiss. I don't care how far back in your family they are, how much of an heirloom they are, how precious they are to you. They are Mutter. They are Mutter, their place. Because the only time you have Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kiss is as an added stringency above and beyond, built upon Klishon Lach Lister. Others say, no, you could have it regardless. It's a separate category. It's a Muktzah category. And then we lastly discussed. Do we have something in the middle? Mias. That's lastly. We didn't have anything in the middle. We took a little bit of a break. Maybe that's one thing. We have a couple weeks off because of Pesach.
You skipped over something? You didn't tell us?
No, I don't think so. So Aviva just pointed out, and I should remind people that some people call the second category Muktzah Machmas Isser, the Klishim Lachdel Isser. Some people call that Muktzah Machmas Isser, like this gray book, but I haven't seen it anywhere else. They're the same thing. Category number two is both Klishon Lachdel Isser and Muktzah Machmas Isser.
Yeah. Do you have to designate the hammer before Shabbos if you're going to use it in
that? No. Not if you need to use that. There was one opinion that we saw from the Mishnah Berurah, which is that if it's a Klishon Lachdel Isser and you could use something else in your house for that same purpose, you should prefer to use the other thing. But other Achronim did not agree with that. Others said, no, if you have a hammer next to you, you don't have to get up to go to the next room to get, the nutcracker itself. You can use the hammer right next to you. As long as you're using it for a purpose that's much less than you can use. Okay. I'm about to go on my third medication, by the way. Still going. I'm getting a CT scan after I get this medication, then we'll see what's going on. Doctor says it does not look great in the side, in the cavities of my whatever. Sphenoid. Anyone knows familiar with the sphenoid? It's back there. Raina knows what I'm talking about. Either way. So that was number four. Muktzah Machmas Mias. Muktzah Machmas Mias, we said, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist. It's the category that doesn't exist. It's like the 13th floor. Mm-hmm. Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
It's the strangest thing ever. Anyway, one time I was giving a shiur about, I forgot, it was a random topic, but it had nothing to do with it, and I skipped the 13th source for just when I labeled it. I just, and all the people in the shiur were like, Rabbi, do you believe in not putting the 13th? Like, no, it was a mistake. Anyway, so the category doesn't exist. Muktzah Machmas, why does it not exist? It doesn't exist because it's either one of two things. Either it's so disgusting that you're allowed to move it, get it out of your way, or it doesn't exist because it's completely useless, right? And therefore, it's just the same as category number one. So for practically, we list it as its own category because it's not a stick or a stone, which are naturally useless. I mean, it is naturally useless, but it's not by status quo. It's made into uselessness, right? Think it's just a dirty diaper. What are you going to use a dirty diaper for? If it's not in your way, as in the example of the Gemara terminology, it's in a chaser acharas, it's somebody else's. That wasn't a Gemara, that was a Shulchan Aruch. Either way, so if it's in a different place that nobody's living, no one's walking by, no one's bothered by it, so then just leave it there. It's like sticks and stones. It's useless. That's considered muktzah. Muktzah Nachos Gupa, muktzah Mamish, whatever you want to call it. Whereas if it was disgusting and it is in a place where you're walking by, so then it's graf shelri, it's a pan of excrement, and therefore you're allowed to move it because it's impinging upon your pleasure of Shabbos. And that's why Muktzah Machmas Mias, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist. It does exist, by the way, in theory, according to Rabbi Yehuda. That was the whole Mishnah that we did for a few weeks. Rabbi Yehuda held that the old lamp was Muktzah Machmas Mias. Rabbi Shimon didn't agree with that, right? Okay. Last week we started on our fifth category. The reason why this is a separate category is because as opposed to all of the first four categories, sort of, category number two is its own discussion. We talked about it for a long time. But in terms of, and then I guess category number three potentially also, because it's a derivative of category number two, according to some. The point is that category number five is what we call nolad. Nolad applies, as we saw already last week, even to Rabbi Shimon. Even to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's the guy that says, Ein Mukta. There's no such thing as Mukta. This whole topic doesn't exist. No, of course, that's not what it means. Because even Rabbi Shimon holds to the first category of Mukta, sticks and stones, things that are so obviously unusable that the default, even for Rabbi Shimon, is that they're Mukta. For Rabbi Yehuda, everything's default is Mukta, right? Right? So then it's not really relevant for us to make a distinction. But according to Rabbi Shimon, he also holds that Nolad is Mukta. The difference with Nolad is, as you can understand from the name, is that it's born on Shabbos. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about something that comes out of the birthing canal. What it means is that it's created, it's coming to existence on Shabbos. And as we started giving examples last week of different things, there are some things that you could look at as either coming into existence or not coming into existence. One of the examples was a newspaper. Does a newspaper that's printed on Friday night come into existence on Shabbos? It lands on your doorstep. Leave aside for the moment the restriction of what you should and shouldn't be reading on Shabbos. Not going to talk about that right now. But just the Nolad question, did the newspaper exist before Shabbos? So it depends how you look at it. As a newspaper, it did not exist, but as materials for the newspaper, it did exist. All the ink was there. All the paper was there.
The article.
The article ideas were probably not there. Because a lot of them are written. So I'll tell you, from my perspective, it has nothing to do with Mukta, by the way, because ideas don't create Mukta or not create Mukta. But as a sports fan growing up on Shabbos morning, what you're looking for the next day are, you know, what was the score of the game that finished at 10 o'clock last night? The late game they never had, because those finish at like 1 o'clock. Those are the West Coast games. You know, the baseball games start at like 10 o'clock or something like that. They're not going to finish in the East Coast till 1. And therefore a lot of papers didn't have those scores. The point being, there are things in the newspaper that aren't written before Shabbos, or aren't even thought of before Shabbos, because they can't write them. And there are some times where some sports writers will preemptively write a column and then have to scrap it because it didn't happen that way. There's a famous case of Mitch Albom, for those who know about. Those who know was Mitch Albom?
I know who he is.
You know Michelle. Anyway, so he once wrote a whole article. He preemptively wrote a sports article way when he was younger. And when he was still a beat writer for like the Tigers or something when he was here. Anyway, either way. So that's some inside baseball, yeah. Or he got in trouble for it because it didn't include some important details.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a famous case. That's a famous case. Truman, right, and he held up the paper, right? Oh, so that's a separate question, but it's a good question. So the other question, besides Nolad, that people have to deal with, and besides what you're allowed to read on Shabbos, which people have to deal with, is also the Tchum question. The Rishus HaRab, Rishus HaYachid, is not really such a question because that is a... because that, I believe, is not really a malacha done for the Jew. No, it is in some ways, but it's done for multiple people at the same time. The traversing of it is done, right? When you're going from the public domain to the private domain, that's done for non-Jews as well, mostly non-Jews. So I think that's not as much of a problem. But tchum is still a problem. To get something from outside of the tchum, to use something that's coming from outside of the tchum is a problem. That's the same thing, by the way, for like Amazon packages. Question whether you can touch them when they're on your porch. We're not going to get to that right now. But maybe we will. And that's, by the way, not necessarily a mukta thing. That's a tchum thing. It's a different category entirely. But it could be related. That could be another subcategory of mukta machmas iser. It's mukta because it's usr, not because it's mukta. All right, that gets a little more complicated. But not going to get into that. So no what? Something comes into existence. Is the newspaper coming into existence, or did everything already exist and now it's just being sort of put together in a different form? And that's a fascinating question, and we're going to see that a little bit today. We started with a Gemara in Beitza, also known as Be'ah, also known as Mukta, also known as Yantif. Depends who you ask and at what time in their life you ask them. Yeshiva Bachra sometimes will be obsessed with saying Be'ah. They just think it's like a good shtick. Depending, if you go to modern Orthodox school, you'll call it Beitza. If you go to really yeshivish places, they'll call it Mukta. Or Yantif, Mesechus Yantif. Either way. This is the Gemara we talked about last week. Beta Shenolda B'Yom Tov. Now, the only reason this is even a question is because we're talking about Yantif. On Shabbos, it's not even relevant because you can't prepare food on Shabbos. But for Yantif, a brand new chick comes into existence on Yantif. Can I eat it? Now, to us, that sounds like kind of crazy. Depends if it's, I guess that's only if it's a fertilized egg, but let's say it's a regular unfertilized egg.
Yeah.
What?
You can't kill it right away.
Why not? I mean, you're not going to get any meat out of it, so that's probably a bad example. I'm talking more about an egg that's laid, that's not yet fertilized. Yeah, not really a chick. That's not going to happen. But I don't think. But like an egg that you could use to make an omelet or whatever. You can do that on Yantif. You can make eggs on Yantif, right? So the question is, this egg did not exist before Yantif, and now it exists. What's the counter-argument to that? You don't have any counter-argument to that?
It did sort of exist,
right? That's the counter-argument. The question is, well, wait, did it sort of exist? Now, there are two... What?
What is that? You're going to keep my mother-in-law. Sometimes you find, like, what do you call it, undeveloped eggs within...
Sure, and the Gemara talks about that.
Okay, so...
The Gemara talks about that. Yeah. Is that considered to be existing? What do we look at to figure out what exists? If a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, did it really fall? It didn't make a sound, right? Does it make a sound? So that's a cute question, but the true question is, is existence defined by human experience? When we talk about this egg, especially when it comes to muktzah, what does the word muktzah mean? Remember, go back all the way to our first class about muktzah. Muktzah means, what are you thinking about in your head? What is and what isn't considered pushed aside? Muktzah mida'ato. So does a person think to themselves, I know there's an egg in there. I'm just waiting for it to come. So do they think that? Do they have the timing right? They know exactly when the chick is going to, you know, when the hen is going to lay the egg? So that's a legitimate question. That's what the Gemara talks about a little bit here. But the question the Gemara asks first was, what kind of chicken was it? If it's a chicken, right, we just talked about this last week, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing. If it's a chicken, which is omedes la'achila, you're eating this chicken, you look at this chicken and you say, this is dinner. In which case, dinner is a bad example because you can't really prepare from one day to the other. Let's say this is lunch, and it's, you know, Yantif morning, and lo and behold, the chicken that the hen that you expected to eat for lunch had laid an egg. So when you looked at that hen before Yantif, this is your food. And anything that's inside of it is your food. So that's not a question at all. So right, so the Gemara says, that's not a question. Even Beis Hillel, who in the Mishnah is saying you shouldn't eat it, he would say you can eat that, because it's you are dictated that this thing is your food. Right? Uchlo de ifrasu, just food that came off. Rather, it must be referring to a hen that was set for laying eggs. In which case, why would Beis Shammai allow you to eat the egg? You didn't know it was coming. You don't know when the eggs are coming. And therefore, it should be muktzahi. And then the Gemara said, muktzahi? What kind of question is that? Maybe Beis Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon. Maybe Beis Shammai, he likes people whose names start with Shin. Shammai, Shimon, Shin Mems, right? The Shin Mem Club, which nowadays means something very different in Israel. But isn't Shin Mem like the Secret Service of Israel? Shin Bet. Never mind. Okay, I got that wrong. Shin Mem. Either way, so Beis Shammai is saying, maybe we possibly have a Shimon. What kind of question is, just because the hen is situated to lay eggs, and I don't know about the eggs, that I'm going to say it's Asur because it's Muktzah? What's Muktzah? I hold a Rebbe Shimon. Muktzah doesn't exist. There's no such thing as Muktzah. Why can't we say that? There's a meeting going on in the other room. We have to be more animated than the executive board. That's our job tonight. Muktzah yumai kusha diyom beis shammai leis luhu Muktzah. Says the Gemara, kasal kadaisin afilu man deshari ben Muktzah benolad aser. I'm going to punctuate that differently. for those who can see it. I'm just reviewing. Yeah, I'm in the middle of the Gemara. Probably 60% down in the Gemara. In the middle of the word, middle of the line, it says ka salka da'atin. Ka salka da'atin afilu man deshari v'mukta. Even Rabbi Shimon, who allows mukta, that's what those words mean, even the one who holds that mukta is allowed. Benolad asar. When it comes to nolad, that's an exception. Even Rabbi Shimon, that generally assumes innocence until proven mukta, by nolad, we don't hold that way. By nolad, we assume everything's mukta. If it's born on Shabbos, on Yontif, it's mukta. Even Rabbi Shimon holds that. Let me just see for a second. So then, if that's the case, my time I was based Shammai. What's the reason, according to Beis Shammai, that he would allow it? Why, if we hold that Nolad is Aser according to everybody, so then why would Beis Shammai allow it? So Amar Rav Nachman, La'olam, really, B'tarnagolas ha'omenes l'gadla beitzim. We are talking about a hen that's laying eggs. Uda islay mukta, islay Nolad. Anyone who holds of mukta, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, also holds of Nolad. Uda lay slay mukta, and those who do not hold of mukta, meaning Rabbi Shimon, also lay slay Nolad. Also holds that there is no such thing as no. Beis Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon, ubeis Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. Beis Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon that there is no mukta, and therefore there is no nolad, and therefore you're allowed to have this egg. And Beis Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Beis Hillel likes the hey guys, right? The Yehuda, Hillel, right? Easy to remember thus far. Beis Hillel likes Rabbi Yehuda's shita, and he says that it is mukta. And anyone who says that it's mukta also says that it's nolad. And therefore, Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to eat it.
This depends on the kind of chicken. If it's a laying chicken, but if it's designated for meat.
First and foremost, it depends on that. Right. Once we got past that hurdle, and we said, we're definitely talking about a hen that's laying eggs, so then we have a question about Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Wait, if it's a hen that's for eating, then
chicken.
You can eat it. Whatever it is and whatever's inside of it, as long as it's kosher. Yeah, but it was part of the chicken that you said you're going to eat. Yeah, just like if you'd open it up, you'd find an egg, you could eat it. So too, if it laid the egg, you could eat it, because the whole thing was edible for you. So that's what we're proposing right now. We are proposing that nolad is usher only for those who hold that mukta is usher. And if you don't hold the mukta is usher, so then you will not hold that nolad is usher. But Umi Amar Rav Nachman Hachi. Did Rav Nachman really say that? How could he? V'hatanan, doesn't the Mishnah say, we know this Mishnah. Magbihin me'al hashulchan atzamos uklipin. A person is allowed to remove from the table bones and peels. Who says that? Only Beis Shammai, if you remember the Gemara. Ubeis Hillel Omer Misaligas Hatavla Kulu Menara. Beis Hillel says, no, you can't touch the peels. You can't touch the bones. Pick up the whole table and shake it off, but don't touch it with your hands. Beis Hillel holds of Mukta. That's why you're not allowed to touch it. The Omer of Nachman. And then Rav Nachman said, whoa. Anu Ein Lanu Ela Beis Shammai Krev Yehuda Ubeis Hillel Krev Shimon. We hold that Beis Shammai is the one that holds the Krev Yehuda, and says, as is typical. Now, this is actually easier to remember than what I said before. Before we said, oh, shin and shin, hey and hey. This is easier to remember. Beis Shammai is always the machmir guy. Beis Shammai always holds that you should be more stringent. And therefore, when it comes to mukta, at least, we know that Beis Shammai holds, like Rabbi Yehuda, that the default is mukta, everything is usher until proven usable. And Beis Hillel is the one that holds like Rabbi Shimon. Beis Hillel, who's always lenient, holds like Rabbi Shimon, that also mukta is not mukta until we deem it so. Innocent until proven mukta. And therefore we come back to our question here. So how is it that we're claiming Beis Shammai is allowing you to eat the egg because he holds like Rabbi Shimon? He doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. Explicitly from Rav Nachman himself, he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. So we can't say that. So Amar Lach Rav Nachman, says the Gemara, this is what Rav Nachman would say to you. That's how it says it, but Rav Nachman's not around anymore to actually tell us. But this, the Gemara is playing devil's advocate and saying that this is what Rav Nachman would say. Gabe Shabbos, when it comes to Shabbos, this Satam Lan Tana Krebi Shimon. When it comes to Shabbos, when the Mishnah tells us straight, Stam means without any attribution. In other words, Stam is like regular, without any like uniqueness. Stam, the Satam Lan Tana Krebi Shimon, when there's a Mishnah which teaches us Stam, like Rabbi Shimon, did not mechatzchin et hadlu in levnei abahima v'et hanavei levnei aklavim, so they mokum lo beit hillel, like Rabbi Shimon. So, I know you're running out of paper. You're not going to have the next part of this. But, suffice it to say that we made it all make sense in terms of Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. That's not material for us today. The Gemara makes it make sense that by Shabbos, Beis Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon. Beis Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon. And by Yontif, there's a Mishnah that sounds like we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore Beis Hillel is going to pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. And then it goes through, is that really true? Fine, whatever. For our purposes today, what we've found is that even we propose, and I'm not really sure actually, the maskana of the Gemara. Hold on. There's a lot of Gemara quoting methodology here. The Mishnah's strategy. Hold on. Yeah, in the end of the day, the Gemara throws out this whole thing. And the question really is, by a hen that's designated for eating, but it's a yantif that falls out after Shabbos. Meaning, so I'd say it gets more complicated. Yeah. There's more of Nolad stuff in the next one. It's not going to be as relevant for us, because we're just going to take this Gemara and run with the concept that a person could hold of not having Mukta, meaning Rabbi Shimon, but also still have Nolad. And that's what we have here in the Tosfos over here. This Tosfos is a halachic Tosfos. We looked at it last week. The Tosfos is towards the bottom of the Gemara, on the outside of the page. Well, for you, it's the left side of the page. Tosos is always on the outside. Kasal Kadaitin, we looked at this last week, I think. Kasal Kadaitin, da filu man de shari muktu benoed asir. Dolo, why is it that even if you hold a mukta is always allowed, that by noed it would not be allowed? Why is that? Says Tosfos, dolo mekatse inish mai de chazile. A person is not going to push away mikatze inish. A person is not going to push away from their psyche, from their understanding. They're not going to push away that which is chazile, which is befitting for use. Chazile. You guys once used a word that I liked, and I can't remember now. Either way, something that you're going to use. Right, so that's Rabbi Shimon's whole point, is that if it's a fork, I'm not going to assume that it's mukta. That's obviously usable. However, this is the next word, aval. You see that aval? Aval b'nolad, when it comes to something which is just born on Shabbos, lo hava yada me'esmol. You could not possibly have known about it the day before. So at the onset of Shabbos, or here in this case, Yantif, There's no way you can prepare it. There's no way you can prepare for it, right? We generally assume, right, as if you remember the labels for label, or sorry, what was it? Labels for label. You know, at the onset of Shabbos, everything gets labeled, right? Imagine, you know, a smart house with AI technology, and they can see everything in your house, and right when Shkia passes, it labels everything, and you can see every single thing in the house, and at that moment, it determines, is this usable for Shabbos? Not mukta. Is this mukta? Then it's mukta, right? That's the onset of Shabbos. That's how a person dictates his items in his house. But if you don't see it, you can't designate it.
You couldn't say, you know, any eggs of this chicken lays.
Oh, so that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. So there are, right. So there are two aspects to this. There are two permutations of this. There's one egg which is fully formed. The Gemara Amud Beis talks about that. Gemara talks about, what about something which is clearly fully formed, but what about something which is not necessarily fully formed? Right? So let's say it's a winter Shabbos. I don't know the calendar of a chicken's cycle. I assume they still lay eggs in the winter because I can still buy them from the store. But it's a winter Shabbos. So the onset of Shabbos is like 4 o'clock, 4:30. Right? By the time 10 o'clock rolls around the next morning, that the egg that you're seeing now might not have even existed inside the chicken the day before. So that kind of thing, you can imagine why we would say, you know, no distinctions, right? So I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it, that aspect of it yet, but it is certainly a worthwhile discussion. Hold on. Okay, Tosfos then brings in a Gemara that he's going to reject. He brings in a Gemara that seems to be a problem for Rabbi Shimon's opinion, you know, for Rabbi Shimon to hold of Nolad, and then he excuses it. The first wide line of Tosfos. You see the end of the Tosfos here? There's three wide lines. The first word of the line is dummy, which is not pejorative. It means like similar to, like dome. So he says, lo dummy, dehai nolad, dehachi have nolad tfei. In this case, in our Gemara, it's a greater instance of nolad. Why? Tfei means more. Sorry, I should have translated that more specifically. Dehacha, in this case, have, it is nolad tfei. It's more nolad. What does it mean, more nolad? Shemitzchila lo haya ba'olam. It didn't exist yet. It didn't exist. Was not in the world at all. The egg didn't exist. It was, the nutrients were still coming together to form the egg. Whatever that means, I don't know. Hasam, about Hasam, he's talking about the kli, which broke on Shabbos, which is what the other Gemara is about. Hasam ha'kli haya ba'olam rak shenishbar. That nolad is, can you use a shard of pottery, which was only a shard, created, made it into a shard on Shabbos. But the thing existed already. That shard was there, just, it was part of the kli. It was part of the vessel. V'chein mashma nami be'erevin. And that is what is implied by the Gemara in Erevin. Now let's pause from the Tosfos and look at that Gemara in Erevin. Hopefully everyone has these. You don't have it. Here, you can have mine. I'll look at the actual Gemara.
You should have two papers. The top of the paper you'll have Mem Hey Amud Aleph, mm-hmm. And another top of the paper you'll have Mem Vav Amud, Mem Hey Amud Beis, which is Suda, and another Gemara you'll have Mem Vav Amud Aleph, which is Mana. Right, that one's good. So, which one comes first?
Mem Hey, good. Mem Hey Amud Beis at the bottom. Let me look this up. I don't know if I've looked at this Gemara very deeply. Let's go to what we call the two dots, also known as a colon. It's about 10 lines up. I don't know if you see it. The first word on the line is lay. Yeah. Um, Okay, hold on. Got to figure out what this Gemara is referring to. Okay. I really don't want to go into this, but suffice it to say that for the sake of dictating one's area of movement on Shabbos, it depends where you are at the beginning of Shabbos. Okay? You know this concept of tchum. And if you're within the tchum, you get the whole area, the whole civilized area. Right? So when we go to sleep at night on Friday night, when we start Shabbos, we're in the city. So we get to move about the entire city. If you are outside of civilization, this happens sometimes in an airport, so then you only get the building that you're in, or if you're outside, how much do you get? 4 amos in every direction. You only get the 2,000 amos when you're in a city. If you're not in a city, you don't even get that. You get 4 amos in every direction, you're stuck. It's a real question, but just don't be outside. At least get inside the airport. That's the best piece of advice I can give you. Sometimes you're stuck on a plane, and you really have a problem, because then how are you going to get off the plane? It's a real shiloh, by the way. It happens all the time. I know. It'll pull you off or something. I don't know. But either way, we're not talking about that now, nor am I familiar with all the intricacies of it. But the Gemara here starts off with the two dots. Amar Mar, which is referring to something they said earlier, B'yom Tov, Hare Hein Karagle Kol Adam. Karagle Kol Adam. I'm just trying to get to this part where I want. Rosh Hashloh Haisalan Shvita Bein Hashmashos B'chol Tzad She'ir Yiv Ha'adam Yachol Etzlan. No. Hold on. I think it's referring to a person on a boat. Hold on. Should have said it before, of course. Okay, I see where this is from. This is a different thing. This is talking about whether a well can serve as a tchum. Okay, we're going to skip a little bit. Okay. Let's go to the Gemara that's talking about it's more complicated than that. I'm trying to get to one specific line, but I want to give you the context of the line, and the context is really involved. Basically, it's talking about whether or not the water which falls on Shabbos, which falls on Yantif, can be used as your tchum. Tchum is basically your Erev tchumen. You have your tchum, you have your 2,000 amos, and if you want to extend those 2,000 amos beyond where you are, so you can put like some kind of food or something you're going to use, and then you could extend it past that. That's called an Erev Tchumen, but it's not this kind of Erev. This is a very different Erev, two completely different things. I mean, not completely, they're both food, but whatever. So that's what it's talking about. And in the context of that discussion, it says on the bottom line here, Maya Be'ev, it's the last four words on the line, of the page. Sorry, I was going to go through more of this context now. I realized it got too complicated. Umaya Be'eva Mivla Bli. Maya be'eva, water be'eva. What's eva? Anyone know? Eva is a cloud. Water in the cloud, mivla bali'i. Anyone know what that means? Bali'i, balua, balios, bolea could mean to swallow. It's connected to that word. We don't, maybe, what? Contain. It's like that. a good way to remember is mavlia is like to be enveloped. Similar sounding words. But bolea, we have it by Pesach. Kibolo kach polto. Anyone know that phrase? Kibolo kach polto. The way that you kosher an item, you have to use the same method that it was absorbed with. Kibolo, like it's absorbed, kach polto. That's how you get it out. So for your oven, which cooks items at very high temperatures, you can only kosher it at very high temperatures. And your countertop, which at best had hot things splatter on it, but was never cooked on, so the way that you get that out is by Eroi, Kli Rishon, you pour boiling things on it. Right? And same thing with your sink. Like, that's the rule. The rule is the way that it is absorbed. So the word absorbed is Kibolo. And in general halakhic terminology, when it comes to getting, you know, you have meat inside of a utensil, that's called a blia. A blia is an absorption. I'll give you a great shayla that, or a fun shayla that I got from my cousin last night at the wedding that was in Lakewood. His wife made pariv noodles using water she heated up in the urn. Right, to make it quicker, she just heated up instead of on the pot, whatever. And then she went to make a second batch, and she realized inside of the urn was a packaged string cheese. Her kids had thrown a string cheese into the urn somehow, some way. And the question was, are there bleos? Did the bleos go outside of the string cheese into the urn? Right? Can you say that there are absorptions from the cheese, which was still closed? I don't know how that's possible. Sounds very dangerous with the plastic and everything. But the point is that do we say that the cheese came out of the plastic? Okay, that was the shout. But the point is that the word blia means to be absorbed. So here we're saying, maya be'eva mivla blia. So the water in the cloud is absorbed. Let's look at Rashi at the bottom. It's absorbed, meaning it does not exist. It does not exist, says Rashi. Uchaman delesnehu. It's as if it's not there. Uchaman delesnehu. It's like it's not there. Damu. It's as if it's not there. Velo kanuluhu shvisa emesh. And therefore, the water did not acquire that as its place the day before. We're talking about where is the water's home base. Right, when we have our home base, that's how far we can walk on Shabbos. Wherever we are, the water has the same thing. Wherever the water is at the beginning, so that's as far as you can take the water. The right items also has tchum, which is comes back to the newspaper question and package question. So now we're saying no problem with the water. The water doesn't exist. And therefore, it doesn't acquire a place that you therefore have to worry about tchum. Right? So for instance, let's say just use the newspaper as an example, not to say this is true, but to say the newspaper did not exist before Shabbos started. And therefore, when it's brought over here, it's not going outside of the tchum, because it didn't have a tchum at the beginning of Shabbos. Right? That's what we're saying here. The water didn't have a tchum. It never had a shvisa. A shvisa is your home base. That's where you establish your 2,000 amos in every direction. Right? So the water didn't have one. So now the Gemara says, wait a second. You're telling me it doesn't exist before Shabbos? Go on to Mem Vav Amud Aleph, the next paper. If that's the case, Kol Shekein, it's definitely Aser. Why? Da'av Elohu Nolad Da'asiri. It must be a nolad problem. Because if you're telling me it didn't exist, so then forget about tchum. You're telling me this thing came into existence on Shabbos. If it really didn't exist, and therefore it didn't have a home base at the beginning of Yatzah, beginning with Shabbos, so then now we've got a nolad problem. Okay, stop. You walked yourself right into that one, right? You were trying to solve your problems by saying, oh, it doesn't have a home base. It's not a tchum problem. Yeah, but now it's a nolad problem. It's just as problematic. That's just... Yeah, we're talking about the rain in the cloud. Right, and therefore it says Rashi at the top, Afilu l'taltel bimkoman. Even if you were in the cloud, you wouldn't be allowed to move it. Right? So this is not what he's talking about, whether it's in the well or something, I think. But the point is, Da'asiri. And therefore the Gemara says, Ella, this is the top of the line, top line of the Gemara. Ella Maya Ba'avim Meinad Naidi. Anyone know that word? Meinad means moving. Navanad Ba'aret. Right, he says to Canaan. Was that Canaan? To Kayan. That's right. Connected to that, right. But either way, so Meinad Naidi, okay, fine, the water is in the clouds, and it's moving around. And that's why it doesn't, it's both in existence, and also doesn't have a home base, because it's moving. That's the idea. And I don't want to get into a whole Arabic question, because I don't know it well enough to tell you, to explain it to you. But let's look at Tosfos here. Give me another example. We can only introduce this, I think. We'll keep these papers for next week. Give me another example of a liquid which is inside of another thing that maybe you have a question whether you can use it on Shabbos or Yantis. That's an interesting one. Okay, those are both collected liquids. Think of something more like a cloud, but in the physical world, in the tangible world. A liquid which is inside of something else that maybe you could use on Shabbos or Yantif for the question. What about fruit? Some grapes. Juices that are seeping out of a fruit. Are you allowed to use those on Shabbos?
Orange?
Are you allowed to drink orange juice that naturally seeped out of an orange on Shabbos? Is that called nolad or not?
No.
It's in the, you've got a grape, and that grape is dripping delicious grape juice. Can you drink that grape juice on Shabbos? Or Yantif, let's say Yantif. Yeah. Ah, exactly. So that's what the Gemara just said about the water. Right? We just said, hey, that's nolad. No, it's not nolad. The water is in the clouds. It's already there. Which, by the way, is very relevant to the newspaper question because it's not really there, but it's there. Right? It's coming down in a different form than it exists up there. Not in a different form, but in a more tangible form. So here also, the juice from the fruit should be okay too. But we know the Gemara tells us in Sachem and other places that you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to drink from juices that are excreted on Yantif.
Even if you didn't squeeze it.
Even if you didn't squeeze it. Yeah. Now, the Tosfos will go into this question. But this is the basis of a lot. This Tosfos, I believe, is the basis of a lot of Noah questions. So, Mirza Shem, next week we're going to focus on this Tosfos. And really get into the definitions of what is and what isn't nolad. This Gemara is fundamental to the question, because here we have established even something which is intangible and inaccessible, but in existence, the space in between in and existence, in existence is not nolad. It's not a problem of nolad. Can you get that water out of the cloud at the beginning of Shabbos? No, but it doesn't matter. Just like the egg and the chicken might not matter. Okay, so that's, now we're going to get into our sort of honing in on the definition of what is and what isn't nolad. Just because you can't get it, just because you can't touch it, just because you can't, you know, look at it, that does not mean that it's automatically nolad. So that's what we're going to get to Mirza Shem next week.